Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the Dwayne Johnson to my rock. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Justin Peach. What a weekend. And not just because of the twists and turns once again in the championship, also because it's WrestleMania weekend, mate.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I've been reminded several times because I've seen several footballing incidents that have warranted a WrestleMania type response. Like there's a choke slam from Virgil van Dijk earlier in the week on an opposition player, and it's just twigged me. And then yeah, a couple more, but yeah, absolutely WrestleMania week. It's exciting, and then obviously all the drama that the football brings as well. It's made to measure.
It absolutely is. And I haven't seen any of WrestleMania yet. I'm looking forward to watching it later on this afternoon. But yes, it's just been my excitement levels for the weekend have just been incredible. Because I'll tell you what, some of the action in the championship this weekend, some of the twists and turns, it's a league that just doesn't stop giving, does it? So with that being said, welcome to the number one championship podcast, the Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Yeah, some interesting results this week, and it's got to be said at the top and bottom of the table. So we're going to go through all of them very shortly. Of course, the East Anglian Derby and Norwich's hoodoo continuing over Ipswich, but also Leeds losing as well. Leicester going back top of the table. We'll go through all of that. Also talk about the playoff race and the relegation battle and finish up with the polls and Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight right at the end of the show. So in the East Anglian Derby, Norwich's hoodoo over Ipswich continued. They beat their big rivals 1-0, thanks to a free kick from Marcelino Nunes. Three-word reviews here from Norwich fans. Tance says, pride of Anglia. Shell says, it's happened again. Lots of people saying 15 years unbeaten. And James says, East Anglia owners. These are the Ipswich fans' response. Stuart's Glove says, didn't show up. Suffolk Lad says, we move on. 15 years since Ipswich last won in this fixture. And I tell you what, Justin, it'll be difficult to argue that they deserved anything from this game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Ipswich were, you know, quite poor. Looked a little bit jaded, a little bit, you know, tactically not quite on it. It felt like David Wagner did the better job, the Norwich manager did the better job in terms of tactically setting up for the derby. And you're absolutely right. Yeah, 15 years is going to stretch even longer. And obviously, if one of these sides go up, it's going to be even longer. So the time ticks on. But as far as derbies go, maybe a little bit underwhelming. I was expecting a 3-3 draw and 6-7 yellow cards, but we got a 1-0 win and one yellow card. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible stuff. But you're absolutely right, yeah. Ipswich didn't really deserve anything. It wasn't a game full of quality, but Norwich edged a tight one, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, it probably wasn't a derby for the ages, and despite everything that was at stake, it maybe didn't live up to the hype in terms of the spectacle. But I mean, the atmosphere was still there, wasn't it?
It was.
But you got to look at it from this way. Ipswich only had two shots in the first hour of the game. It wasn't until the last 10 minutes or so, really, that they started making things happen. But they were just so off it. And I'm not sure Kieran McKenna got out-coached. I think it was more just a case of Ipswich looked really nervous because their passes into the final third weren't connecting like they usually do. It was just really poor from their perspective. They weren't helped either by the keeper, Vaclav Hladký, not having a great game. He definitely should have done better with the goal, and his passing out from the back wasn't at its best. But look, Norwich fully deserved the win. They won the individual battles, and if their finishing was a bit better, they could have won this by more. And so their ridiculous record against their big rivals continues. And it's got to be said, it is a ridiculous record, isn't it, Justin? They were chanting 15 years, 15 years, and they've played each other on 14 occasions in that time and haven't lost. It's quite unbelievable, isn't it?
It is incredible. It's quite something as well. I mean, to stay that unbeaten for that long, yeah, I think it is, especially in modern football, is quite something. And they spent a lot of time together in the Championship as well. I know Norwich have been promoted to the Premier League. They spent time in League One before that, and Ipswich have as well. They have spent time apart, but I think that adds to the betterment of the derby and makes it even more unique. But that record is quite something. And I think even for Ipswich to be in a better position in the table, you know, Norwich still took 4 points off them. I think that's testament to them and their record and how they set up in both games. It's testament to the setup yesterday. I know there wasn't a lot of quality, but they were so effective and so quick on the counter, and that was a big thing. I mean, a great example of that was the first half. Josh Sargent was, I think he had the fewest touches in the first half. Yeah, but in his involvements, he almost got Tuan Zabi sent off. He won the free kick that Nunes scored and had a half decent chance as a half hour on. It's just about winning those small margins in derbies, and that's what Norwich have done in this game.
The unfortunate fact here is that they are Ipswich's bogey team, aren't they? Unfortunately, from an Ipswich perspective. I mean, every club seems to have a bogey team. Ipswich are in the unfortunate position where theirs is their big rivals. Yeah. And the longer this continues, the harder it's going to be for Ipswich to beat them whenever they meet, because each meeting will just pile on the pressure, won't it? I mean, the time Ipswich should have done it was when they met in the reverse fixture at Portman Road. Ipswich should have won that game, and the fact they didn't just means that they are going to have to bear this record for a bit longer. And Norwich being Ipswich's bogey team, well, it's a great thing to have in mind when you consider there's a decent chance that this could be a playoff semi-final in a few weeks' time. But yeah, it's an unbelievable record, and certainly one to be proud of if you're an Ipswich, not Ipswich Town fan, obviously not, nor a City fan. So another loss for Ipswich in the East Anglian derby. How much could this result affect Ipswich's promotion aspirations, Justin? Because they were unfortunate that Leeds, well, not unfortunate, they were fortunate that Leeds also lost, which we'll talk about shortly. But do you think losing to Norwich may have a knock-on effect?
Yeah, the mental aspect of a derby defeat and really how flat they were is probably one of the concerning factors. And naturally, it's a tough one to take. But I think the reason why they've been one of the best teams in the division, and up until kick-off yesterday, they were the best team in the division. They were top of the league. But yeah, the reason why they're so good is because of their habit of bouncing back. It's effective. So the only way to judge that is how they go into that next game. You mentioned that the Leeds aspect and them losing probably lifts the pressure a little bit. But as I say, that mental aspect, the psychological furor surrounding a derby day defeat to your rivals who are also pushing for promotion adds a little bit more pressure, a little bit more frustration. And I know McKenna accepted that Ipswich were flat, but it's probably a lesson for the rest of the season. I think to some extent, Ipswich need games to be a little bit loose, a little bit chaotic. And if they're not, there's maybe an element of struggle there. But that's why they got players like Kiefer Moore, who was half fit going into this game because he was meant to miss out with back spasms. But that's by the by. But yeah, it's going to impact their promotion aspirations. But at the same time, I think circumstances have allowed that pressure to ease up a little bit with Leeds losing.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Their record of bouncing back after a defeat this season is incredibly impressive. They had only previously lost 5 times this season, and this is what happened after each of those defeats. So for their first one, they went on to win 4 in a row. After their second, they went on to win 4 in a row again. Their third one, they went on to draw against Leicester. The fourth one, they went on to draw against West Brom. And their most recent one, they won 3 in a row after that. So that's a really promising record. And look, Norwich away, this was their most difficult remaining game, and now it's out of the way. Ipswich's next tour against Watford and Middlesbrough at home, 2 games they should be winning. Not bad sides, but their seasons are virtually over. And then they've still got Hull and Coventry away, which will be tricky, but it's by and large a set of games Ipswich should be looking at and saying we can get three points from each of them. And with Leeds' loss, promotion is still in Ipswich's hands, and that's probably a position that Ipswich would be all right with after the weekend, if you see what I mean, Justin.
It's the best possible scenario with losing your local derby, isn't it? It's a weird stance to take, but if you're going to take any positives from losing to Norwich, it's the fact that Leeds lost in it, and it allows Ipswich that, not as much pressure going to the next game. There will be pressure, but it's going to be lifted because Leeds aren't going to be 2 points ahead of 2 points ahead of Ipswich going into those next round of fixtures. So that's the main takeaway. It's a case of just dust yourself down, put it all aside, and then you can go again. And like we mentioned, Ipswich are very good at doing that.
Leeds lost a league game for the first time in 2024. They were beaten 2-1 away at Coventry. 3-word reviews here from KS, who says, typical Leeds in it. I don't think I'm the kind of man who's suited to saying in it. And Lee says, falling apart, again. It's got to be said, Justin, for the third game in a row, Leeds look flat.
I don't know whether it's harsh to take that stance or not. I think if you talk about the broader context of it, injuries have taken its toll, fatigue's taken its toll on the team. So it's going to be a case of, they're quite a bit against a Coventry team who have got things ticking in the final third. So it was a really dangerous fixture for Leeds. And I've got a few Coventry friends I was speaking to, and they were confident going into it as well because of how, well, I know they lost to Cardiff in their previous game, Coventry that is. But I just think with Leeds' situation and Coventry's energy, it was always going to be a difficult one. You can't outrun flat performances. They catch up to you eventually. Leicester have found that out already this season. So too have Ipswich. And eventually a team for quality that you're coming up against is going to be apparent. And I think that was the case against Coventry. And I just think it's unfortunate that Leeds have hit this spell where fatigue and injuries are there. They're apparent. They're within the squad. And they also came up against this Coventry team who are ticking very well. So, yeah, they look flat, but you can understand why. It's just bad timing, and that's what adds to the spectacle of talking about it, essentially.
Yeah, well, it certainly adds a bit of flavour to the relegation battle.
The reverse relegation battle.
The promotion race is what I meant to say, because it wasn't until around the hour mark that they actually started playing, and by that point they were 2-0 down, possibly could have been even more. I mean, you've got to give full credit to Coventry for outplaying Leeds, particularly in that first half. I mean, Leeds looked rattled and they didn't look like they could match the physicality that Coventry had. It's worth mentioning that Joel Pirro did miss a massive chance towards the end of the game. So it could have been a very different result, but it would have been very harsh on Coventry, who fully deserved the win here. So Leeds' first championship loss of the calendar year. I mean, full credit where it's due. That is an unbelievable record for us to be in early to mid-April, and they've only just lost for the first time in the league this year. Wow. But it's undeniably been a tricky start to the business end of the season, hasn't it, Justin? They were lucky to escape with a point against Watford. They got the win against Hull, but were helped by a clumsy late penalty, and have now lost here. Not the kind of performances which inspire confidence, particularly at this stage in the season, Justin.
It's true, but can we say the same about Ipswich against Norwich? No, Leicester have had the last few games preceding the last two against Norwich and Birmingham. They've been a little bit flat as well. So I think it's normal for these teams to hit these patches. And I think with Leeds, it's probably there's a little bit more noise around hitting these flat patches because it's Leeds. Everyone loves the narrative of Leeds falling apart again. They're falling apart again, don't they? I mean, we had it under Marcelo Bielsa. We're expecting them to drop off in the second season when they won the championship title, but they didn't. And now I think the only difference here is the fact that they've got a Leicester side who may be looking like they're back up and running again, probably at the worst time for Leeds. But as I say, I think with Leeds, yes, their confidence in the performances isn't there, but the quality of player that they've got is. And I think if they came up against any other team other than Coventry, they might have well picked up 3 points. That's a hindsight thing. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't mean anything to anybody, me saying that. But I just think timing of the team they were playing wasn't ideal because Coventry are a good side.
Yeah, you're a lot more positive than me.
Yeah,
I think,
I am.
I'm just looking at this thinking this has gone from a blip to a dip. They're undoubtedly not playing as well as they were before the international break, and this dip is happening at the worst possible time. And there must be some alarm bells for Leeds, because when you go from playing as well as they were to playing like this, it's a big concern. I mean, so many individuals look off it. Crescencio Somerville has been really ineffective in the last two games. Glenn Kamara has been particularly poor in midfield recently. I mean, Patrick Bamford's been absolutely hopeless since the international break. And then the defence, which was once seemingly impenetrable not too long ago, doesn't look so solid now, particularly in front of Meslier in goal, who's looking very shaky all of a sudden. So you've got to be worried as a Leeds fan. They may have to win every game now, because I'm not sure they'll have many more opportunities to get back into the top two. Because we were just talking about it then. Leicester look like they're back as they were.
Yep.
Ipswich haven't got too many banana skin games coming up, and Leeds are having to catch up with them, aren't they?
But would you put it against this Leeds team going on that 5-game winning run? Because
they've done it before. Justin. I mean, if it's anything like Leicester, it could very easily, change like that all of a sudden. But I'm just looking at these three games, and it doesn't, it looks like they've lost the momentum that they had.
It's probably the case. And I think if you're comparing him to Leicester and Ipswich, I mean, Leicester look like they're regaining it. I know Ipswich, it's a difficult one to assess with Ipswich because they had momentum winning three games on the trot going into the game against Norwich, and then they lose with quite a flat performance. So maybe they're in a similar state to Leeds. So I think all that does is just opens it up again with all three sides and makes it all the more unpredictable, because at one point I was so confident with Leeds, and now you're right, I'm stepping back a little bit from those assessments of they're going to win the title, and then with Ipswich there's still a bit of hesitancy there from me as well. So yeah, all it does is just add to that wide open aspect of this top two battle and just makes it all the more incredible.
What a result, though, for Coventry City, Justin. Massive. Three Road Reviews here. This is from Pete Ellis-Sims again. Luke says, Sims and Wright. Sounds a bit like a solicitor's, that, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, this result got me thinking, Justin. If Coventry didn't have that shocking start, they might not be too far off automatic promotion, because they only won three of their first 16. However, since the November international break, only Leicester and Leeds have won more points per game than Coventry City. It's quite mad, isn't it? But I imagine also infuriating in a way from a Coventry perspective that they had such a slow start. Otherwise, they'd be comfortably in the playoffs at least.
Were we saying the same thing last season? If they had a pitch In the first sort of five or six games of last season, could they have been punching with the automatics then? Probably. I think it's just a Coventry thing to start the season slow. I think it's going to be a hindsight thing with Coventry, because it's a kick in the balls, because as I say, they were in a similar situation last season. But I think that slow start was always going to be the case after such an active summer. We saw it with Leeds. We saw it with Southampton. You know, fairly active summers, big players leaving, you know, players coming in to replace those. It takes time for those players to bed in. It's always going to be a little bit slower. So I think if they do miss out on the playoffs, or they don't go up via the playoffs this season, you'd expect them to be pushing for the autos next season, because they have a pitch and they have a squad. So there we go.
Yeah, it only needs a couple of additions, really, doesn't it? Because it's a really strong squad, and that's why it was so amazing that it took so long for them to get going. But I suppose you are right, they did bring in quite a few players. But I mean, they'll still be fully hoping that they can get a playoff place,
absolutely,
won't they? Especially with the form that they're in. It's hard not to be in form when they have two of the best bagsmen in the league right now. Hadji Wright got his sixth goal in seven games. Ellis Sims scored his millionth goal of 2024. And these two have been in sensational form. I mean, full clarity, those two were also partly to blame for Coventry's slow start, because they couldn't find the back of the net for love nor money. But now they definitely can. And, you know, England Ben Sheaf has been exceptional in midfield, and they've reduced the number of chances they're giving away as well. So they're going really well, and are certainly a side to fear if anyone does have them coming up over the next few games and heading into the playoffs as well, were they to get there. But will it be enough for them to get a playoff place, though, Justin? That's the question. They're currently 4 points off Norwich, but do have a game in hand. It's between these two for sixth place at this stage, isn't it, Justin? I think that's fair to say.
I think so. I think the only reason why you discount the likes of Borough, Hull and Preston is because they're just not consistent enough. Therefore, they're not convincing enough. They don't control as games as well as Norwich and Coventry do. They've also got the most convincing attacks. You know, you've mentioned that Ellis Sims, I think he's the most informed striker in the country. Hadji Wright is the best American forward since Landon Donovan. Throwback there, or Josie Altidore if you want to.
I was going to say, you're forgetting Josie Altidore.
But
some,
yeah, as
of the
I say,
won't like Hull, yeah, mentioning him, but you know,
I'm sure he played for Hull as well. But anyway,
he did. You're right. Yeah,
yeah, he did. Yeah. But they've got the most informed attacks as well. Josh Sargent, another US based player, incredible. America's just infiltrating the championship.
USA, USA,
exactly. Democracy. Let's go.
Democracy, what are you on about?
You know, just the US liberating everybody.
Freedom.
Let's not get all political. But anyway, like I was saying, it's looking like a straight shootout between these two sides. That's basically,
Okay, good, thank you. Well, you're right, Preston seem to be fading away as expected and have a horrible set of remaining games. So if they weren't out of the race before, I'd say they are now. Hull got a very overdue win against Cardiff this weekend, so they're not completely out of it, but their form hasn't been anywhere near Coventry and Norwich, so that would be a surprise. So it does look like it will be between these two, and it could very well go down to the wire. I will point out, not completely out of the question that they both get a playoff place and West Brom drop out, because West Brom have hit a bit of a sticky patch of form since the international break. But admittedly, I would still be very surprised if they weren't in the playoffs come May. So yeah, Coventry v Norwich. Got to be said, Norwich massively have the upper hand, not just in terms of points, but they have a much kinder set of remaining fixtures. But Coventry have shown this weekend that they can beat anyone in this league. So it's going to be a really interesting climax in the race for the playoffs. It was once so open, wasn't it, Justin? And now it looks like it's just down to these last two soldiers. That's not the same with the automatic promotion race. That has still got three horses in the fight, but one of those horses is well in front all of a sudden, isn't it, Justin? Because it's been the perfect weekend for Leicester City. They beat Birmingham 2-1 thanks to an 87th minute winner from Steffi Mavadidi. Judd's three-word review: got it done. Tim says back on top. And Tim is very right, isn't he? Because this win means they've gone back to the top of the table after being the only team in the top three not to lose. So a dream Saturday for them, although they were made to work for the 3 points, weren't they, Justin?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be the case where you're coming up against a Birmingham side coached by Gary Rowett, also going through that maybe a little bit of a new manager bounce as well. But I guess the outlier here was Leicester were in control. They created a lot of chances and they did deserve the 3 points in the end. You are right, they did make hard work of it themselves, but it feels like a season-defining result where it's going to be one of those games where I think a couple of weeks ago, it gets away from them. They draw it, but that belief seems to have come back. And I think that's a huge, huge thing. I think you've only got to look at Enzo Maresca's reactions to the last two goals that Leicester have scored at home. They've been massive, and you just feel the relief coming from him, which is why a man of his age is sprinting down touchlines. People of that age don't do that. I'm 30 years old. I don't sprint anymore. So you know, you've got to really feel that relief to run like that, essentially. And as I say, a late winner, despite missing no chances. I know John Rooney pulled off some really good saves, but for me, it just feels like, a season-defining result that could carry them forwards.
I'll point out two things from what you said there. First of all, Enzo Maresca's 44. I'm sure people at the age of 44 still run.
Right.
And secondly, I'll go on.
Who sprints now?
The only other thing I was going to mention there, Justin, is that I've seen you play football and you definitely don't sprint.
Exactly, exactly. I play like Andre
even
Pirlo.
Even before you were 30.
I play like Andre Pirlo never needed to sprint, and neither do I.
I'm just going to leave that there. I mean, Birmingham were clearly happy to get anything that wasn't a loss and set up that way, didn't they? They defended really well, and it was just that brief lapse in concentration where no one was picking up Steffi Mavadidi at the back post, and it cost them. And Leicester would have been annoyed if they didn't get the win, particularly because the Birmingham goal came from an absolute clanger by the keeper, Mads Hermansson. But Leicester got there in the end, and this 3 points could prove to be vital. You're absolutely right, Justin. It could be a season-defining win for Leicester, and that's because all of a sudden, Leicester are suddenly in a really strong position again, aren't they? Top of the league by 1 point, but crucially, a game in hand on Ipswich and Leeds. And the Premier League has gone from seemingly slipping out of their grasp to being well within their reach again, hasn't it?
I think this is such the crazy thing over the last few weeks, is how often it's changed hands, and obviously how much of a lead Leicester have actually blown for those teams below them to get into it. But, you know, to give Leicester a bit of praise, they are... I think the hardest thing is to turn around a ship that is stuck, isn't it? You know, it's difficult, but they're slowly doing it. I mean, I will say this: I'm not a huge fan of Maresca and his insistence on control over quality. I think if he really does play into the quality of this squad, I think they will be more convincing in those games, and they will run away with games a little bit more and probably create a lot more chances than they do, which is a crazy thing. But that quality of the squad is there to be seen, and it's dragging them through games, and I think that's what's going to pull them over the line. I think what you see with Leeds at the moment is, you know, fatigued quality, diminished quality in availability, and with Ipswich as well, they probably don't quite have the star power that likes of Leicester and Leeds do either, and that's a big thing, and that's a huge advantage that Leicester have over the likes of Leeds and Ipswich, is they've got that star power. Mavadidi, Dewsbury Hall, and Mavadidi's been out of form, but he's there. He's back. Dewsbury Hall, etc. A lot of players who can carry this Leicester side through and have done it throughout the season.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm not sure how they've just clicked all of a sudden. It's quite remarkable, really, because after the loss to Bristol City back on Good Friday, you'd have probably said Ipswich and Leeds were now the favourites to go up, and then Leicester looked really nervy early on against Norwich on Easter Monday and conceded. But from that point on, they just seem to have transformed back into the Leicester of old. I'm not really sure why or how it's happened, but it's very impressive. And I can almost guarantee that if it was the Leicester of 2 or 3 weeks ago playing against Gary Rowett's Birmingham, they wouldn't have won that match. They probably would have just accepted that this was going to be another missed opportunity for them. So the mentality switch has been incredible. And I feel like you may be being a bit harsh to Enzo Maresca, Justin, because I think he deserves so much credit for switching that mentality and getting them back to playing as well as they can do. I mean, he had plenty of people questioning him as a manager after their big dip in form. So to turn it around so quickly is amazing. And we're now in a position again, Justin, where if Leicester didn't get promoted from here, it would be a massive, massive balls up. But you know what? They're in a really, really good position, aren't they? So looks like it's Leicester's to lose at this stage. But yeah, we'll wait and see, shall we? Birmingham can take a lot of credit for that performance, though, can't they, Justin, against Leicester? They were really resolute against one of the best teams in the league, if not the best. Despite that, though, this has pretty much been their nightmare weekend. I say that because they lost and the three teams who were immediately below them heading into this weekend all won. And it's meant Birmingham have dropped into the bottom three of the Championship for the first time this season and the first time since February 2021. So a bit of a strange one, a bit of a bittersweet weekend, really. Hypothetically, a good weekend in the way that they nearly got a point against top of the league. Factually, though, a bad weekend.
Absolutely. A team that's been perennially fighting relegation for the past 10 years has only been in the relegation zone once in the last 3 years. Absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah,
that's an incredible statistic. So kudos to you for finding that one out. But yeah, it was a disaster. It was a disaster. And I think if you are up against a Kosh for as long as Birmingham were against Leicester side and, you know, conceding a lot of chances, there's got to be an element of, well, it's got to come at some point. So yeah, I think that's the frustrating thing. And obviously with Huddersfield winning, Plymouth winning, Sheffield Wednesday winning, it makes it really uncomfortable. But like I said, I think this Birmingham side's got a lot of quality in it. But unfortunately, we haven't seen it since John Eustace has left the club, and we'll keep saying it over and over again. But unfortunately, I just think confidence is that low at the minute. It's really hard to see them putting together a run of results. Like, you know, Stoke have done it, Millwall have done it previously. I know they've dropped back into it, but Birmingham are yet to do it, which is the crazy thing.
You don't sound too confident then about Birmingham's chances, Justin. I would say I'm still fairly confident they'll be all right, but you don't sound as confident as me.
No, I'm not, because I think I've been waiting for it to click at some point, because we've been saying over and over again how good their squad is. Their squad's mid-table. It absolutely is. But for whatever reason, the reason's very obvious as to why the confidence is as low as it is. A certain Wayne Rooney has diminished the football club the playing squad of its confidence, which is crazy because I think the ownership has done a lot of really good work off the pitch. But on the pitch, it's been diabolical. And unfortunately, you can only point the finger at one man for that. And you've had Tony Mowbray, Mark Venus and Gary Rowett sweeping up an almighty mess left behind by England's greatest ever goal scorer, which is an absolutely outstanding headline to throw out there. But the reason why I'm so diminished of confidence with Birmingham is because we're waiting for it to click and it hasn't done that. It just hasn't done it. And that's the worrying thing. It's not done it since John Eustace has left. It's a massive, massive concern. When will it happen?
Well, that is the question. When will it happen? I mean, the reason I say I'm fairly confident Birmingham will be all right is because when I look at the teams down there, Birmingham are probably the last side I would want to face out of the teams in the relegation battle. I would say they've got a lot more metal about them now under Rowett, and that should develop into results. I mean, just flicking through some of the remaining games of the teams down there, Birmingham probably have a better set than most. They've got Cardiff at home in midweek. They don't have anything to play for now and they're out of form. They've also got Rotherham and Huddersfield to come. They still have to play both Coventry and Norwich, but that is at home. So I would say that's an encouraging set of games to go. But you are right, Justin. It's a lot easier said than done getting results from those games. And they need results ASAP. So if they're going to come, now is the time for them to come. We'll quickly touch on Southampton, Justin. If their automatic promotion hopes weren't over before, they are now. It's after they drew 0-0 with Blackburn. I mean, a cracking result to Blackburn. Fair play to them. They are proving to be a team who's really hard to beat and seem to be getting further and further away from the relegation battle. So fair play to them. But seeing a lot of frustration being aimed at Russell Martin from Southampton fans, Justin, what do you think?
It's interesting. Just before I get onto that, I just want to touch on the ironic statement of saying Blackburn are picking hard to beat and are picking up points, given that the man in charge of them was in charge of Birmingham, who need exactly yes. that thing now, which is interesting. But with Russell Martin and the frustration being aimed at him, look, Russell Martin plays a certain way. It's never gonna breed a massive success of results, because he has had habits, or not habits, sorry. There have been periods in his form as Swansea manager where they dropped off, where Swansea dropped off. And then he sort of shuts up shop. They become harder to break down, harder to beat. And that's what sort of, you know, Southampton's having to go through at the moment, because they've been conceding some sloppy goals, silly goals. And I understand that, but I think Southampton are a bit not as far along the process as the likes of Leeds and Leicester are. So it's quite easy to compare them, because financially they're up there with them. But when you're comparing them to Leeds and Leicester, they are nowhere near those two sides in terms of their journeys. I think Russell Martin will do a very good thing with Southampton. I think he just needs a little bit more time to bed in. And we'll see what they do in the playoffs. But for me, he's got a lot of issues that need working out. Defensively, they're still going through those motions. And we saw that against Blackburn, because they weren't as effective as they usually are.
Well, it's certainly not ideal preparation for the playoffs, is it? Out of form, and a manager who the fans are getting increasingly frustrated by. To be fair, though, they haven't played poorly since the international break. They were just very wasteful in front of goal against Middlesbrough and Blackburn, and were, of course, punished late on against Ipswich, but were the better team for most of that game. So I think the criticism of Martin is harsh. They're probably going to finish the season with one of the highest points tallies a team has ever had without getting automatically promoted. So they're not that bad. They just haven't been able to match the extraordinary standards of the top three. So I think there has to be a bit of perspective here, I think, and time will tell whether they manage to gain a bit of momentum heading into the playoffs, because that's what they desperately need, isn't it? Justin, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about the relegation battle in the Championship.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast, and it's now time for us to check out how our Second Tier multiple with SBK got on, which included our Game of the Week, as well as Justin and I's two bankers from Friday. So we had Ipswich, Leicester and QPR all to win. So only my pick of Leicester to win came in. I am losing hope that we will get one before the end of the season, Justin, I've got to say. But we'll be back with another multiple in this coming Friday's preview show with SBK. Anyway, let's get on to the relegation battle, Justin. And Sheffield Wednesday got their first win in 5 by winning 2-0 away at QPR. Three-word reviews here. This is from QPR fan Charlie. Big game lost. Wednesday fan Ollie says, "We're staying up." And Justin, what a gigantic result this is for Danny Rule's boys.
Yeah, you can't overstate how big it is. It's absolutely massive. And I think, I mean, the huge outlier with this one is, you know, Wednesday had second worst away record in the division going into it. Had only collected 13 points away from Hillsborough this season. I know it was a tight game in terms of chances, but Wednesday just had the quality. And tell you what, you know, the last four games actually, they've not looked convincing at all. I know they drew against Swansea, but still, you know, 6-0 defeat coupled with a defeat against Middlesbrough where they were really poor, to the point where Danny Rule was seething. And he's not an angry man, he's a very forgiving man. He was an angry man against after Middlesbrough. So this was a huge response and a huge reaction, especially in the manner of the win, because Gassama didn't even start the game and he turned out to be the absolute defining figure of the fixture. It was a huge win for Wednesday. You can't overstate it, because it keeps them well, I say it keeps them within touching distance. They are well within getting out of that bottom three now.
Yeah. Well, if they didn't win, Justin, if they lost, they would have been 4 points from safety. And it would have been getting to the stage where you'd be saying, that's your lot for Wednesday. I mean, it would have been very difficult to see them getting back from that, wouldn't it? But they do not give up, do they? Every time it looks like they might be fading, they pull themselves up from the brink. So fair play to them. They just won't accept relegation, will they? There's still a lot of work to do, of course. They've got Norwich here midweek, which is that's a really tricky game. But then you've got Stoke and then they've got Blackburn. And this is it now for Wednesday, isn't it? We were saying on Friday that it's do or die territory now for Sheffield Wednesday. And this was a great start for that. They've done tremendously well to get to this stage, considering where they were at one point. But it will mean nothing if they don't keep pushing until the very end. But you cannot rule that out with this Wednesday team because they just do not accept death. A poor result for QPR and a pretty poor performance, actually. A wasted opportunity, you've got to say. I mean, if they won, you'd probably say that'll be it. They're definitely safe. But this result and the incredible results elsewhere means teams like QPR, Stoke and Millwall sat a bit more nervously than they were before, Justin.
Yeah, I think that's a frustrating thing. Maybe I jumped too early with my shout of Marty Sifuentes as manager of the season. Maybe that's the curse. Maybe that's what's cursed it. But you are right. This was such a poor performance and one that isn't like QPR, really, because defensively they were quite weak, in my opinion, as well. They made some mistakes that they don't usually make and allowed Wednesday to be the better side, which has been the big thing for them. They haven't allowed other teams to do that. So, yeah, a hugely disappointing performance and one, again, it just makes you sweat a little bit more if you're a QPR fan. It was a performance you didn't need at this point because, as I say, Wednesday, such a winnable game. No disrespect to Wednesday, such a winnable game because they're so poor away from home, but they did not turn up.
Yeah, well, they were absolutely flying, weren't they? Like the hardest geezer guys running across Africa. Yeah. They're absolutely flying, but now they're looking over their shoulder a bit, aren't they? I mean, to be honest, QPR should be all right still. There's certainly teams down there who you would say are more likely to go down. It is a bit worrying how the only way they're getting goals right now is centre-back scoring worldies. I mean, they've only scored three goals in five games, and they've all been scored by either Steve Cook or Jimmy Dunn. None of their strikers can find the back of net for love nor money. So that is a worry. I'd also be concerned about the remaining games. They've got Plymouth away in midweek, which, I mean, that is a massive, massive game. But then their final four games, all against top 10 sides. So we'll see. What they are is very defensively resilient, and that should lead to some draws at least. And that may end up being the minimum that QPR need. So, you know, no need to hit the panic button, but still a lot of work to do, particularly shooting practice for those bloody strikers. Did you see that QPR's mascot Jude the Cat has reportedly been fired after claims he flirted with female fans on match days? The Sun says he was given multiple warnings to stop trying it on with women at games. Justin, this might be my favourite story of the season.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And for context, this isn't a real cat. This is a human being within a cat costume, just for those people who need the extra layer of information on there. Just in case anyone forgot or was misinterpreted. But yeah, such a weird story and quite rightly removed from the role because you cannot exploit your position as a match day mascot to try and pull women, sadly. That is just not how... That's not your role. Come on, let's do better.
It's just so funny. It's just so... It's like... It's proper lower league stuff, isn't it? But this is the Championship.
It'd have been like, can you imagine if this, you know, QPR were in the Premier League and this was happening?
Oh, yeah.
It'd have been incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. More of this, please. I think, actually, I'm starting to regret that statement. No, let's move
not
on.
More of that. Non. Do not do this. Do not. You're a mascot. Be a mascot.
Mascots being... Oh, dear.
No, family friendly.
No, but I quite enjoy mascots being inappropriate to a certain level, okay? That's what I was trying to say. I would like to see more of that, but not necessarily as bad as this.
Yes. Just don't
have I covered
try,
my back?
I don't know. I'm trying to find a way to help you. Just don't try it on with other parties. Yes. Do your job as a mascot where you can piss opposition players off, make fun of them, while also being a family-friendly, cuddly toy.
Can we also mention, by the way, how weird it must be for any of the women he was flirting with to be literally having a cat mascot flirting with you. It must be so strange.
Cat calling them.
honestly just did that. That is, I tell you what, sometimes you set new standards for yourself. That is a great shout, Justin.
They're usually very well done.
That's a very good way to end that horrible section. Huddersfield got their first win in seven by beating Millwall 1-0, thanks to a 93rd-minute winner from Reece Healy. Three-word reviews here from James. Last minute, baby. Joanne says injury time win. Al, who's a Millwall fan, says we're going down. I mean, how Huddersfield didn't score earlier on in this game was unbelievable. I have no idea, because they missed so many unbelievable chances. But, you know, we talk about much-needed wins. Huddersfield probably needed a win more than anyone else this weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, I imagine it's the hardest geezer needing a takeaway after his incredible running scene across Africa. Like, who needs something more? The hardest geezer in a takeaway or Huddersfield in a win? I think probably Huddersfield in a bloody win. And you're talking about the strikers, how they didn't score. It's very obvious how they didn't score, because they're so bloody wasteful in front of goal. It's the reason why they only won 9 games this season, which is the second least in the division, aside from Rotherham. It's a frustrating time for Huddersfield, but absolutely that air of relief and the amount of chances they created. Yeah, credit to them, because we've not seen that often enough, but so frustratingly bloody wasteful. You know, if they weren't so wasteful and they had strikers who can score consistently and do things consistently, other than being offside, they'll be in a very decent position. But they haven't done it often enough. And I think if any game this game week was going to be a last minute winner, it was going to be this one.
Yeah, well, Andre Brighton writer called it a dirty win, which to me would imply they didn't play very well. But they did play well, Justin, you know what I mean?
I think any win against Millwall's dirty, isn't it?
I suppose. I mean, I'm looking at this, and I genuinely think this was the best Huddersfield have played in a while, because they created so many chances and Millwall were mainly restricted to half chances from set pieces. So the only thing that was dirty was the fact that they left it so late in the game. But even then, they should have scored a lot sooner. So I would say it was more of a grubby win than a dirty one for me personally. But look, they haven't been playing well at all recently. So this was a lot more like it from their perspective. Their next four games are Preston, Bristol City, Swansea and Birmingham. I mean, definitely one of the more kinder remaining sets of fixtures right there, isn't it? But it has got to be said, they have got Ipswich away on the final day. So they certainly don't want their fate to be relying on that, do they? But yeah, this certainly gives you at least a bit of encouragement from a Huddersfield perspective, because it was looking a bit bleak not too long ago. I've got to say, Justin, Millwall aside, I'm getting increasingly more worried about it. It's one win in six, 1 point from their last four games. They've now lost to Rotherham and Huddersfield in the last two games. Concerning.
Yeah, I think the ironic thing is the amount of, I would say, feedback we got for suggesting that Neil Harris is maybe limited as a Millwall manager from one of the clips we put out on Twitter. But I think this is a game that really showcased his limitations as a manager, because there's only so often or so many teams you can sit deep and make it difficult to play against essentially. And Huddersfield, probably one of those teams that they're going to be comfortable and they're going to come at you. I think, as I say, it just highlights those reservations we have. Their style of play is going to work against certain teams. It's going to be those teams that want the ball. They're going to want to dominate the ball. But when, you know, a team is without, like Huddersfield, who are, again, are probably similarly comfortable in terms of pressing without the ball, yeah, it's going to go against them. It's going to highlight those issues that Harris has. So for me, yeah, two damaging defeats. Goals are dried up. Chances are drying up. Yeah, this is not a time to drop out of form.
No, it's really not. And I mean, the tide of this relegation battle is changing all the time, and it's very hard to say anything with much certainty, but Millwall and Birmingham were really the big losers of this weekend as far as the fight to stay up is concerned. And what I will say is, I look at the likes of Wednesday and Huddersfield, my concern for them recently has been going up and down, if you see what I mean. With Millwall, it's just my concerns just steadily going up and up. And if you go into be leaving empty-handed after games against Rotherham and Huddersfield, it doesn't leave you with a massive amount of hope for Leicester in midweek, does it? So, in fairness, they are unbeaten at home under Neil Harris, so that's a bit of encouragement they can take. However, I am very worried about Millwall under him, because, as previously stated, as you were just saying then, Justin, you can only get so far with a club legend telling the players to do better. Because when it comes to tactical ingenuity, there isn't much to be found here. And that's one of the many things which may end up costing them, I think. As time goes on, it's looking more and more likely that may be the case.
Yeah. I'm just going to add as well, I think time's moved on from that Neil Harris ball, if you like. I think, you know, the league's moved on. There's a lot of teams who play slightly differently, a little bit more ingenuity, a little bit more cleverness about them. And not to discredit Neil Harris and what he does, his football's probably better suited to lower leagues, which is why his last two jobs have been Gillingham and Cambridge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many teams in this league play Neil Harris kind of style now, Justin? Not many of them are doing particularly well, are they? Yeah. It's not looking good at all for Millwall. Definitely need a bounce back sooner rather than later, don't we, Justin? And the final game we'll discuss from the weekend is the game at Rotherham. They've been officially relegated from the Championship. It's after they lost 1-0 at home to Plymouth. Unfortunately, the Great Escape wasn't on after all, I'm afraid, Justin. You'd be very disappointed to know. Three-word reviews here from C. Clark, who says, important 3 points. Bobby says, finally a win. They, of course, being from a Plymouth perspective. This was a game which pretty much sums up Rotherham's season, really, wasn't it? Second best to a side who had lost 8 of their last 11 games. They had won just twice away from home all season, had Plymouth. And the only player to come out of this game with any credit from a Rotherham perspective was the goalkeeper, Victor Johansson. Essentially, their season in a nutshell, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Where's it all gone wrong for Rotherham, Justin? And keep in mind, we have only got about 15 minutes left of the show.
Oh, so I can take 15 minutes describing where it went wrong for Rotherham?
I would prefer if you didn't and just kept it short.
Okay, I'll time me on 15 seconds then. I don't think it's lack of resources. I think good teams utilise their resources and Rotherham haven't done that. Don't get me wrong. I think the impact of the quality of players compared to other teams who can offer more money is going to be impacted. But I think signing the likes of Daniel Ayala, Cafu, Sean Morrison, Grant Hall, journeymen who are at the end of their careers, who haven't played a lot of football across 2 years, and expecting them to do a job in the Championship, frankly, is a joke. I'm sorry, it is a joke. It doesn't matter if you're Rotherham, Cardiff, Watford, any team, signing those level of players and that amount of players who have been in that situation, in their careers, it's a recipe for disaster, and we've seen that. The balance between offering those resources and the rest of the squad and trying to be a bit clever with their recruitment, I think, has been completely shooed. We'll use the examples of Coventry, Luton, etc., who have done it with limited resources and are still doing it in, they're still punching above the weight with limited resources. It's no excuse nowadays.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, Justin. I think you are right. I did laugh when Sky showed a graphic after this game that showed Rotherham were 24th in the league for shots on target, expected goals for, expected goals against, shots faced, shots on target faced, successful passes and possession. And that's before you get onto things that actually matter, like the points tally and goal difference. If they lose every one of their remaining games, they'll have tied with the record for the fewest points and fewest wins in the Championship season. They are genuinely one of the worst sides we've ever seen at this level. It's a League One squad with a League One manager, but I mean, they could have a Championship manager and they wouldn't have come close to staying up. And Rotherham fans will point out their resources, but I agree with you, Justin. I don't think that's a good enough excuse, really. Their last five seasons in the Championship, they've been relegated 4 times. And each time they've come up to the Championship, each season, all they try to do is survive. And even when they do that, it's the same goal the season afterwards. There's no plan to try and get to the next level, you know. It's all well and good saying, oh, we haven't got much resources. But as you say, clubs of a similar stature have managed to have success despite not having much resources themselves. They just have to be much more clever and a bit more ambitious with their recruitments. And I know that's easier said than done, and I will go on to you shortly, Justin. But that's what Rotherham have to do, because otherwise, what's the point in them being in the Championship? The only way I can see them progressing as a club is getting in a new owner or just being a bit more ambitious themselves, because right now they clearly have a ceiling and it currently looks like they have no chance of breaking through it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on. You've nailed everything there. I think the only thing I'll caveat is I think resources, you can have a certain amount of empathy with the resources that they have. But the resources they have is no excuse to go down the way they've gone down. There's no excuse to get relegated the way they got relegated. There's no fight there. There's no personality within the team. There needs to be a quite significant reset. And I think if the club goes through that, because you're not recovered from the Paul Warne era, it's as simple as that. They're not recovered from that. And unfortunately, they've been trying to sort of put out fires with water balloons, and it's just not worked. And those water balloons are very poppable, and they are fragile, as much of their squad is right now, because of their age and injury record. So for me, going down the way they have gone down is no excuse. The balance of resources is no excuse for that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Justin. Let's talk about Plymouth quickly, because it's quite hard to judge this from their perspective. It's undoubtedly a massive win, considering their recent form. But the fact a lot of teams around them also won means Plymouth are another one with plenty of work to do still, aren't they?
Yeah, it's one of those where you sort of celebrate and go, ah, yes, ah, God, okay, fine enough. Right, yeah. Sit that down. Yeah, it's one of those situations, but it's about turning that tide for Plymouth because they've been dreadful under Ian Foster. They get that win, albeit not sexy, not beautiful. It was a gritty win on a Friday night at Rotherham, but they got the win, they got the clean sheet, and they go home to Plymouth. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Don't really have anything else to add there, Justin. Let's do the polls. This is the part of the show where we give the listeners three questions on Twitter because we want to get their thoughts on everything to do with the championship. So the first question we asked was this. Who is the bigger club, Ipswich Town or Norwich City?
I'm not going to go on history. I'm going to go on what's going on now, and I think Norwich are the bigger club.
If you're talking recent success, then it's got to be Norwich, yeah. Hasn't it? If you're talking fan base, I think it's pretty even. If you're talking history, it's Ipswich.
Yeah.
So it balances out like that, really, doesn't it? So exactly. It's no surprise that it's pretty evenly split in this poll. 49% of people said Ipswich, 51% said Norwich. I mean, for me, I think history is a big factor here. So I'd probably just edge it to Ipswich, but you know, it's a tight one, isn't it, admittedly. Who should win manager of the season? Marty Sifuentes, Carlos Corberan, Daniel Farke, or Kieran McKenna?
Sifuentes. Marty Party.
Still sticking with it.
Marty Party, let's go. I will go against the grain as much as I can and fly the flag for those at the bottom half of the table who deserve their flowers every once in a while.
If you didn't listen to Friday's episode, Justin made the incredible claim that Marty Sifuentes deserves it much more than Kieran McKenna,
I was proved right this weekend.
I mean, I will point out that a hell of a lot of QPR fans were even saying Kieran McKenna deserves to win it, and this is what the polls say. 77% of people said Kieran McKenna, 9% said Daniel Farke, 8% said Marty Sifuentes, 6% said Carlos Corberan. I think Carlos Corberan deserves
Do you know what? You're absolutely spot on. And I think when we come around to doing our second tier awards, the much better, more acclaimed awards of the championship, we will certainly give him a lot of credit then.
Yeah. He deserves more than 6%, doesn't he?
He does.
That's not fair at all. And finally, what is your favourite type of apple? Braeburn, Golden Delicious, Granny Smith, Royal Gala?
Do you know what? This is such a good question. I have two types. I buy two brands, Braeburn and Royal Gala. Pink Lady's overrated. If anyone says Pink Lady, get in the bin. Piss off. Right? They're so overrated. There's not enough apple in them. Braeburn, ooh, yeah. Go on.
Justin has had his say. I'm a Golden Delicious fanboy, admittedly. But the winner of the poll was Granny Smith with 40%, Justin. 27% said Royal Gala, 17% said Golden Delicious, 16% said Braeburn. So it was a tight one, but Granny Smith, still the elite apple, according to our listeners.
It's the green apple, right?
It's very similar to Golden Delicious. I always get them mixed up whenever I go to the shops. It's an absolute nightmare. But yes, they are green, but a bit shinier, I think.
Green apples, no.
Golden Delicious are green. Golden Delicious are, for me, and always will be the goat apple.
Cool. Yeah, great. Fantastic. Let's go.
Now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon, Grace and Edge.
Yes, it's time for Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. So Justin is going to ask me to name eight of a certain subject. All I've got to do is name all eight. So, for example, if he would say, name Steve Bruce's last eight clubs, and I would say Villa, that's one down. Newcastle, that's another down. But if I were then to say Weymouth, I would lose a life. So all I need to do is give all eight answers without losing all of my lives. And you can get involved in the fun by sending in your Hateful Eights for either Justin or I to answer. Send them into secondtierpod@gmail.com and you could get a shout out the next time we do a Hateful Eight. Who's this Hateful Eight from, Justin?
This is from Neil, and it's a good one. So Ipswich failed to overturn a lead for just a sixth time yesterday. So Neil wants you to tell me the eight teams who have accrued the most points from losing positions this season.
Ooh, okay.
It's a tasty one. So it's going to be, I'm going to give you three lives because I think it's a little bit difficult. It's a little bit of a guessing game, but I think there's quite a predictable pattern you can go with.
No, that's fine. Okay, fine. Fine. Well, obviously I'll go Ipswich because they're definitely top.
You're correct. Ipswich have accrued 31 points from losing positions this season, which is by far the most, significant most this season. Yeah. An incredible number.
I'm pretty sure when I looked at this list before, Leeds were second.
Leeds are second with 22 points. Yeah, good shout again. It's an easy pattern to spot with these.
Yeah, but I can't remember who else was next on the list. I mean, one would assume Leicester are on there, but I'm not as confident as I was with the other two.
Are you going with Leicester?
Yes, I am.
You're being correct. They're not on there. They are 11th. They are 11th on the list. They've only had to overturn 13 deficits, and they've collected 13 points doing so.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about. Like, they haven't been behind very often. Mm-hmm. So that's the issue I've got there. Fine. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to stick near the top of the table. I feel like Coventry are quite a, never say die kind of team. So I'll say them.
You're correct. Coventry are fourth on my list with 18 points. They are never say die, especially under Mark Robbins. They will not go without a fight.
And if I'm using similar logic to Ipswich, then Southampton have been a bit leaky at times this season, scored quite a few goals. So I imagine they must be on the list.
They are not on my list. Ooh, they are 16th, even lower than Leicester. Seemingly, the two teams who prefer controlling games have failed to overturn those leads as often as other sides. So maybe there's a pattern there for you to follow. But Southampton is incorrect. They've only won 9 points from losing positions this season.
Yeah. This is very much potluck, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's potluck with some strategy. Think about chaos.
Yeah. Well, if I'm thinking about chaos, then Blackburn have been very chaotic this season. So I'll say them.
Are you going with Blackburn?
Please don't tell me I've lost already.
Do you want to
I'm
go
going
Blackburn
because they score a lot of goals but concede a lot of goals?
Fucking hell. No, Blackburn are not on my list.
Okay.
They were very possession-based and went behind a lot under John Dole Thomson.
Yeah, but I was just thinking they concede so many goals that they must have won a fair few points from losing positions. So that's annoying. Who was on the list, Justin?
Well, I'll tell you how many points Blackburn have won from losing positions. 6 points. They've been dog shite. They are fourth bottom in the division when it comes to overturning leads. The third team on my list was Norwich City with 22 points. They were level with Leeds. That's what I mean. Think about chaos. Norwich have a little bit of that. And you've got Hull below Coventry in fifth. They've won 16 points from losing positions. Sunderland, once upon a time, were good at winning points back from losing positions. Yeah. Because again, if you think back to when, under Tony Mowbray, a lot of that chaos was there.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine, but I just thought because they've been crap for half a season, they won't be that high on the list. But obviously they were. Who else?
You've got Watford, who are seventh. They've won 15 points.
Well, I was never going to fucking guess them in a million years.
You never know. I mean, under Ishmael, they were good at... So, I don't know, actually. No. Yeah, they were surprised me. They were quite high up.
No chance of guessing them.
The other team, who were top last season from in terms of winning points from losing positions, was Middlesbrough. So Middlesbrough, eighth on my list. They've accrued 14 points from losing positions. I think they would have been a good shout to go with.
There were some guessable ones there, but... I mean, I'm not having a go at Neil for his suggestion for the Hateful Eight. I appreciate him getting in touch. But that was a tricky one, Neil. Anyway, that's been the second tier podcast. And we will be back again on Thursday because we've got midweek games, Justin. Oof. Our final round of midweek games for every team in the Championship. So that is exciting. So we look forward to seeing you on Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, to divulge through all of them. So we will see you then. I'm going to go and watch WrestleMania. Justin, what are you doing for the rest of your Sunday?
I'm going to watch the Premier League games this afternoon because I'm a sellout.
Fine. Yeah, you can do that. I wouldn't do that because I'm Championship expert. Anyway, let's leave things there, shall we, Justin? This has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.